Hello and welcome to the 15th episode of the Mangalog Podcast. I am your host, John, and this week's episode is on Children of the Sea, written and illustrated by Daisuke Igarashi. Sorry for the little bit of a later release on a Friday. I tried to get this done first thing in the morning. It's just been kind of busy, you know, with Valentine's Day. I'm single, but I try to make my mom a card, so I had to make time to make her a card and research a gift that she would actually use. So that was kind of earlier in the week for me. And then later on in the week, today and yesterday, which would be Thursday and Friday, Overwatch League started. And for those of you who don't know, I am a huge Overwatch fan. And I played a lot, like probably too much. I just got it late last year, I think around Black Friday, and I've just been addicted to it. I've purposely been avoiding it because I knew if I bought the game when it first came out, I would have been super addicted. And then I finally caved in because it was on sale, and I was like, oh God, what have I done? So yeah, Overwatch League started, which is like this huge tournament. It's the biggest tournament run by Blizzard. It's a exciting. It's my first time actually following it, and it's been fun. I was able to catch a match late last night after I got out of work, and the matches are so long. It's like 2 hours, and I just didn't go to bed on time. Needless to say, I was up for a while, so I didn't get up early this morning like I wanted to. Outside of that, manga-related stuff, which I think this is relevant because these are definitely manga that I'm probably going to cover. That didn't make any sense. These are definitely manga I'm going to cover in the future because, well, I just got a whole bunch of new manga. So Kodansha had a Humble Bundle, and they gave out a ton of series in that bundle. So I dropped like $20, and I got a ton of series. So I don't think it's every volume in all of these series, but like for some of them, I got complete the entire series. Like for instance, there's this manga Pumpkin Scissors, which I've never heard of, but there's Mushishi, all 10 volumes of that. I'll just run down the list. So I got Altair, A Record of Battles, 1-8, Battle Angelita, 1-3, Cells at Work, 1-4, Clockwork Planet, the manga adaption, 1-5, Fire Force, 1-10, Drifting Dragons, 1-3, Flying Witch 1-4, Heaven's Design Team 1-2, I've never heard of that one. I'm Staying on a Million, also never heard of that one. 1-4, Land of the Lustrous 1-5, Noragami 1-6, it looks like. And then, of course, I mentioned Pumpkin Scissors. At that time, I got reincarnated as the Slime. This is the manga adaption 1-4. And 2-Year Eternity 1-7. I think that was everything. That is a bunch of manga, and I only had to drop like $20 for that. So that's super exciting. Definitely going to be covering some of those later on in this show. Not this episode, but, you know, for the podcast. And the cool thing is these are Kodansha manga, which I don't think I've covered too many. Most of the releases I've been covering have been from Viz Media. So that should be cool, just to change things up a little bit, I think the reason why I usually get, or why I've been covering Viz Manga is because, well, one, they have, like, you know, the Shonen Jump, which there's so many series on there, but also, their manga's always going on sale, so I just, like, you know, I try to have my manga on sale, I don't typically, notice the other, manga from other publishers going on sale quite as frequently. But so I'm excited though because I have a ton now, so that's gonna be fun. So if any of those series interest you, there's a possibility that they will be covered on the podcast. In fact, I may be announcing one of those at the end here. So anyways, I think that's enough for updates on my end. Yeah, so sorry, I've been a slacker. It's just like it's Overwatch and Valentine's Day for me this week. Outside of that, I just want to give, you know, shout outs to my new followers. I got a couple since last week. We got Mystic at MysticArcher16 on Twitter. Thanks for the follow. Appreciate it. And we have From Right to Left Podcast. They're new to me. I just started listening to them. Excuse the alarm. I figured I'd give them a follow on Twitter, and they followed me back. So they cover manga and anime, but mostly manga, which is literally in their description. They seem pretty cool so far. I've only listened to a couple episodes, but I'm happy they followed me back. It's pretty nice. Go ahead and give them a listen if you haven't already. So this week again, Children of the Sea by Daisuke Igarashi. It is a mystery manga published in English by Viz. originally ran from 2006 through 2012 in a monthly seinen magazine called the Monthly Iki. The magazine discontinued in 2014, and but it has quite a few notable, I guess, hits contained in their catalog. For instance, they have some manga from Taiyo Matsumoto, who wrote Ping Pong. And from what I heard about Ping Pong, I'd never actually watched the anime or read the manga myself, but and it's not super popular. It's one of those niche things, but the people that have talked about Ping Pong said that they loved it. So it's got quite a unique art style, but I've only heard good things. So, you know, this is just an example of some of the this magazine focuses more on like underground alternative manga. Taiyo Matsumoto stuff is definitely niche, especially when you look at the art, you're like, it's not your typical, when you think of like a manga art style or anime art style, you probably aren't thinking about how Matsumoto draws. And then, you know, they've had some other, Iki has had some other notable works in their magazine. Some stuff by Natsume Ono, namely House of Five Leaves. We got Doro Hedoro, which I think is getting an anime adaption. My friend has been recommending that series to me forever. It's complete. I think it's like 20-something volumes. I would definitely love to read it eventually. You know, it's just so much so much stuff. And that's a pretty big investment. So, but I'm definitely looking forward to reading that. I saw a few of the pages. I'm like, wow, this is interesting. So, yeah, looking forward to that. What else? Viz started releasing Children of the Sea in 2009, the volumes are a little bit pricier, but that's because they're also a little bit longer. There's 8 chapters a volume, and there are 5 volumes total, but the volumes are like 320 something pages a piece, so they're a little thicker than your average tankobon volume. So, excuse me. Daisuke Igarashi, his manga isn't like super, like, I don't know, I don't want to say accessible, but it's not like it sells hits. Like, it's not really a hit in Japan, or probably, and I doubt it's as much of a hit in you know, the English speaking countries either, but the people, you know, they're well acclaimed, like they're critically acclaimed, his works, and some of his works have been nominated for awards, including like the Osamu Tezuka Award, the Manga Taisho Award. Man, I'm just stumbling over my words today. I'm sorry. Children of the Sea also, I believe, got nominated for some awards. If I could find where I read it. I really need to put my computer on Do Not Disturb. My bad. Let me do that right now so you guys don't hear all these chimes in the background. So actually, Children of the Sea, I said, was nominated for the 2008 and 2009 Osamu Tezuka Cultural Prize. He was awarded the Japanese, the Japan Cartoonist Award Excellence Award, the Japan Cartoonist Awards Excellence Award, for drawing Children of the Sea in 2009, and looks like he received an Excellence Prize from the Japan Media Arts Awards in 2009 at the Japan Media Arts Festival. It's actually received a couple of awards, and I know it's getting a film adaption by Studio 4C, who's known for the Berserk trilogy, the Golden Age Arc trilogy of films. I think they mostly do CG work. They've done some video game work. I think they've done the 2011, I remember reading they did the 2011 Thundercats adaptation, which I think ran on Toonami. So that's pretty interesting. So yeah, I don't know what to expect from that, but I'll be curious to check it out, see how they end up adapting it. Because, again, they're known for CG, so I don't know how that's going to look. But, you know, who knows? I've seen some good CG stuff before, so we'll see what happens. So Children of the Sea is a mystery, and that's pretty much the only tag I could find was mystery. Some places listed it as, like, supernatural, and I think Viz actually listed it as a drama and mystery. So, yeah. So it's a mystery. It follows this girl named Ruka. And I think it starts with her, she's kind of daydreaming or recalling a moment she had as a child where she visited her dad's aquarium. She was kind of staring into the large, the large tank. And she happened to notice these lights, and she likened them to like ghosts or something, like these bright lights in the water. I think they were surrounding this fish, kind of like, kind of got like a will-o-wisp type things, like those little balls of, you know, people like spirit balls kind of thing. I don't know how to explain it. If you ever seen like if you ever played Final Fantasy X, when like you kill things in that game, they kind of disappear into like these little orbs, like glowing orbs, and when they die, things die in that world, and it's kind of like a will-o-wisp type thing. So she noticed those in the tank, in the fish tank. She, as a child, she has a memory of these glowing white orbs, and she likens them to ghosts. And then it kind of flash forward to modern day. She's in school. She's I think she's playing handball or something, and you kind of get a feel for her personality. She's very competitive, very kind of like, I guess, tomboyish. She's very athletic and aggressive, and she ends up getting in trouble at school, and gets kicked off the handball team, basically. And so, you know, so she's got a full summer of nothing to do. I think she decides to go for a walk. I don't know, to kind of like get her thoughts together, you know, just because I don't know, something drew her to the ocean. So like at nighttime, she goes to the ocean. She bumps into this boy named Umi. It's just something, there was just something compelling about him. She after seeing him, she kind of becomes not obsessed, but she becomes more and more interested about him. Like she finds herself thinking about him, and eventually she visits her father's aquarium. She kind of lies to her mother about going to handball practice because she hasn't told her that she's kicked off the team. She visits her father's aquarium, and then she, I think she ends up seeing Umi again, and not only do you see Umi, but you see this other boy named Sora. So that's where I guess the plot really starts. You have these two boys, Sora and Umi. They're brothers. Now the weird thing about them is that they were born, as explained by Umi's father, they were born in the ocean. So they were discovered in the ocean as babies, underwater, like underwater, and they've surmised that they've been raised underwater. I'm not sure of like the plausibility of that, like how did they breathe and whatnot, but apparently they were raised by these manatee looking creatures called let me see if I pronounced it right, dugongs. They that that what's the name of that place, that aquarium plate facility, ends up taking these boys in and kind of studying them, because it's, you know, it's weird. It's a weird phenomenon. Like you have these boys living under, that were born under, presumably underwater, or at least being raised underwater. And as far as the manga's established, they're human, but their bodies have adapted to being, you know, being underwater for so long that they need to like frequently douse themselves in water in order to like rehydrate their bodies and stuff like that. You see them sometimes walking around with like a, you know, a cloth over their bodies to protect themselves from the sun. So they've got these weird, you know, weird things that have developed about them from being in, you know, raised in the water, underwater, basically. Ruka kind of she finds herself spending a lot of time here at the aquarium. I think she's offered by her father like a job there, or maybe just to, you know, spend quality time there with him over the summer, and also because she can tell that, you know, Umi and Sora seem to like her, namely Umi. He doesn't really interact with other people, and but he kind of comes on to Ruka, so, and they notice this and they figure it'd be good for him to have someone around his age, you know, just to hang out with. So yeah, so and she agrees, and then the story kind of just follows from there. You're learning about this facility. You learn a lot about Umi and Sora and Ruka. Ruka more so her, like her a little bit of her family situation, but mostly you just have these three kids just like interacting out on the ocean or whatever. And the author, he drops like tips, little tidbits of like what's going on in the world. As far as I could establish, it seems like there's some, I guess, like fish, a lot of fish, like, or a lot of sea creatures are gathering to this area. This is in Japan, by the way, to this Tokyo, to the Tokyo Sea or whatever. This Umi, is thinking it's because of him, they're drawn to him. He has this strange connection to the ocean, from, I guess, just from living underneath there, you know. So he can kind of sense things, and he talks very, like, he talks like kind of cryptically sometimes. It's some of his dialogue is hard to follow. Any dialogue coming from Umi or Sora, it's just like I have no idea what they're talking about sometimes. Like, you know, they're kind of speaking, it's like this, like, I don't know, pseudo philosophically or something. I don't know how to explain it, but like it, they kind of say like these one-off things, and the dialogue in general doesn't feel great, at least in the beginning when you're being introduced, like when this plot is slowly being introduced. As the volume carries on, it starts to ramp up towards the end and actually lands on a very satisfying note. So it's a little bit of a slow start, and I wasn't totally engaged in the dialogue in the beginning. So I encourage you, like, if you do check this out, read like the first volume and get to the end of it, and then see how you feel afterward. But yeah, I'm just not sure what it is. Like, characters will say things and conversation will just like end, and it will cut to the next scene or next panel, and you're like in a totally different area. Like, I don't know, like Umi had this conversation with Sora, and he's like, I don't know, it's like, yeah, so there's this thing, and it's like, and it's a thing. And he's like, yeah. And then Sora's like, yeah, it's a thing. And then the conversation just ends. Like, they're speaking super vaguely about things like there's no context for it. So you're like, okay, this feels like a pointless conversation. You know, maybe it's like foreshadowing or something, but like, 'cause this is a mystery, but like, I don't know if I'm a fan of like when mystery relies on too much on you, just like too much of on characters saying things you have no idea what they're talking about. And like maybe later on it'll be revealed to you, maybe not. But like at this point, it's just like, ooh, what could they, like, trying to pique your interest? Like, ooh, what could they be talking about? You know, it feels like that instead of like there are things going on in the world and I need to know what's going on. Like, how did this happen? Why is it happening? That kind of thing. And it does have a little bit of that too. So again, like these fish are gathering in this area. Umi thinks they're coming for him for some reason, or coming because of him. And then you have this whole like motif about these glowing orbs in the water. Like, I don't want to spoil too much, but like they come across this scene again in the water, and it's really beautiful, but it's kind of like eerie. Like, it draws these fish to it, like almost like a moth to a flame kind of thing. And there's just something weird about it. And yeah, the plot, I'm not quite sure where this is going. Like, I can see like that the story, like, you know, you have these three kids just hanging out with each other on the ocean, but there's a mystery. There's something they're trying to solve. There's something going on here. I guess the mystery is these boys, really, like their origin, and then of course these fish just coming from all over the world, a species that shouldn't necessarily come to the surface are coming to the surface. There's deep sea fish that are dying. That's another thing, and they don't know why. It's yeah, some just weird phenomena, and I'm not quite sure what to think of it yet, but yeah, it's man, it's kind of hard to talk about. Like, this is a mystery manga in general, I feel like are hard to cover, especially when you're trying not to get too many spoilers. You'll notice like this episode, I gave you guys a little bit more plot details than usual because it's so hard to cover what the actual like story of this is so far without giving you what they're trying to set up, you know. Like I can't say, well, it's a mystery, and then not tell you exactly how they're setting up the mystery. So obviously I'm not gonna give you any answers. I'm just as clueless right now. So yeah, that does it for like the story. But yeah, so you have Ruka. She's a pretty cool character. But Umi and Sora are like, again, they're like the attention like of the story. Like, it seems like the focus is them, and even like Ruka is kind of like not obsessed with them, but she's obviously like very interested in them. And these characters, these kids, they don't really act like kids for the most part. They act pretty like adult, and they're very, I don't know what the word is. Yeah, I'm not sure. It's really weird. They don't, yeah, they just don't act like children. They just really don't act like children. They have this weird maturity about them. And they're always talking about things that sound really profound. At least I'm talking about like Umi and Sora. Most of like Ruka's reactions and like dialogue is just her reacting to the other characters, like, what? Huh? What? Like, she's questioning them because like And I'd be doing the same thing. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? Yeah, man, I feel like I'm not really selling you guys on this. I mean, you guys can check it out if this seems like your stick, but I'm just not sure what to think about it. I want to read more because I want to see where this is going. At the same time, this isn't like my total cup of tea. Like, I don't really have much to criticize about it. It's just like, except for the dialogue. The dialogue was a little like stiff in the beginning, and I don't know if that was a purposeful, like, you know, if that was an intentional thing or what. It just didn't feel, you know, authentic to me. It started to pick up again as the volume went on, but in the beginning it starts off a little slow, and like, I just don't know. I just didn't know what to make a lot of it. Yeah, just like, it's like two characters talking about a specific thing, but they're being like super vague, and I feel like they're just being super vague for the sake of mystery. I have no idea. But one thing that I really, really, really like about this series so far, this artist, is his art. It's really busy. Like, there's hardly ever a panel without a background. Like, and when there is a background, it's always so interesting and full of life. Like, the backgrounds are really full, and there's lots of stuff going on, lots of detail. The world feels really like occupied. It's really cool. And it's all, for the most part, for me, it looks, I think it's all hand-drawn. Like, I don't know about this artist, Igarashi's process, but it looks like, you can tell because it's, like, super, like, sketchy, kind of, like, crude. I don't want to say crude, because crude, like, is the impression that it's not drawn well. But it kind of has that, like, oh, what's the word to describe it? Like, kind of, like, I mean, crude is not the word that I'm looking for, but if, for lack of a better word, like, yeah, like, sketchy. It looks very, like, crude. Like, I'm trying to think. I should get a thesaurus and actually try to find out what I'm trying to say. But yeah, just the backgrounds, vehicles. There's a couple scenes where Ruka's riding her bike, and even that's like hand drawn. You can tell like it's not being modeled after something. You know, like it actually looks like, it looks like a drawing, but it looks real. It looks grounded. It looks really grounded. I'm having a hard time because, like, again, I'm not like an art major or anything like that. So I'm trying to describe this, again, in a non-visual medium. So, another thing that really sticks out is like ocean life. Like these sea creatures that he draws, they're so beautiful, and you really get this like great sense of scale. Like, he really knows how to make you feel like you're underwater. It's just like beautiful sea creatures, especially you get those scenes where like the lights, like that supernatural kind of feel with these glowing lights on these fish. Oh my gosh, it's so beautiful. I love it so much. And the sea creatures look like realistic. Like, they're like, they're hand drawn, so they don't look like they're photorealistic, but they look like realistic, but in his style, if that makes any sense. You just have to kind of see it to see what I'm talking about. But yeah, like, ocean life looks great. Water in general, like, not even just the ocean, but like rain. There's a scene in the rain, and the rain just looks crazy. Like, the amount of time it took to have to draw that rain. Oh my gosh, I could just imagine. And like, there's just scenes where like the characters are like in a bathtub or underwater, and just like anytime water is on the page, it looks beautiful. It like that's hard to accomplish. You don't think about it, but like drawing water that looks realistic is got to be super hard to accomplish without just like taking a picture of the water. And, you know, because like some artists do, like, you know, Sano, and all, you know, I'm not trying to discredit him, but like, instead of drawing like trees and stuff and water, he knows that that's not like his strong point, so he relies on Photoshop skills to kind of turn photos into backgrounds, and then fill in his extra texturing and details and characters and all that. But like all this stuff just looks hand drawn. Like, it's awesome. And like, I love the author's close-ups of the characters. Like, a lot of authors do this, like when there's a close-up, the characters are like really super detailed or intense or bold. Well, like, they're not necessarily bold when he does the close-ups, but like there's a lot of extra details, especially like in the hair, like eyelashes, eyebrows, facial hair, that you know, the eyes are just so beautiful. Like, and not just like in the girl characters, but the guy characters. Like, like one, there's just a couple of panels where I noticed this dude's like facial hair just looks so good. I'm like, man, that looks really good. Yeah, so like, I love the art so much. I don't know if it's an acquired taste. I feel like it's not gonna be like universally loved, but I think it looks great personally. I love this, like the sketchiness of it. I love it. I love it so much. Especially those scenes on the ocean and stuff like that. And eyelashes. I don't know what it is, but like he draws really good eyelashes, like just hair in general. Especially when you get like those, you know, those more close-up shots. But I think. Oh, and so a note on the just the beauty of like the nature that he draws, the ocean and stuff like that. I read something that said he was Miyazaki, who directs a lot of the Studio Ghibli films, was a huge inspiration to him. Specifically, he noted My Neighbor Totoro. So yeah, I just thought that was worth pointing out, and I could definitely see the parallels. I can definitely see the inspiration. But I think that's it for this episode, guys. I'm gonna go ahead and again, if you want to check that out, they're a little pricier volumes. I recommend getting it digitally, but you don't, you know, obviously you don't have to, whatever your preference is. But they are cheaper digital. Paperback, they're like $15. So yeah, a little more, a little pricier, but it might be your, it might be something you want to invest in, because like again, it's like I don't read too many mystery, and it's hard for me to get into one if it's not done like under my specific, you know, my specifications. But like I just really love the art. The dialogue could use some work, it just, but like as the volume progressed, it got better. It definitely got better, and the plot started picking up, which, you know, is fine. Like some series need a little bit of a build up, which is okay. But yeah, so I did mention that I would be mentioning the next series I was going to cover. I kind of hinted at it. It's a Kodansha manga. It is and I feel like this is timely. Battle Angel Alita, the movie just came out by James Cam directed by James Cameron, the live action adaptation. And I'm definitely, I think it's called Alita Battle Angel. He re kind of re not reworded it, but like, yeah, moved it around, moved the words around. But yeah, it's Battle Angel Alita. I think it's known as Gunnum in Japan. But in English, it's known as Battle Angel Alita, and that is written and illustrated by Yukito Kishiro. And I, like I said in the beginning, I got the first three volumes of that on the Humble Bundle sale, so I'm gonna try to read all three of those. We'll see what happens. I try to read as much as I can before I do the episode. Sometimes I'm only able to read one book, so that's just how it is. Like in this case, I was only able to read one, but you know, it was a decent sized book, so it's not like I had like, you know, I only had like three chapters, you know, to go off of. I felt like I definitely had to read at least the entire first tankobon to really get a feel for what was going on here. And I'm glad I did, because if I read just the first few chapters, I'm like, eh, I don't know if I want to cover this. I try to stick to what I announce. Some episodes that I announce, or some, yeah, some series that I announce in the podcast, I've read before, I've already started reading. And like, for instance, like Promised Neverland and One Piece, like I was already reading those. Children's Sea, I didn't. I basically, this was my excuse to actually read it, because I bought it a while ago. I just haven't checked it out yet until now. So yeah, so sometimes I'll get series that I've never read before or don't have any history with. So there might be some episodes where I'm like less enthused about a series, but again, I'm not ragging on this series. I think it's good so far. I just, you know, I had a little bit of criticism, but you know, this is not necessarily a review podcast, so I'm trying to leave out some personal feeling, like personal opinions about it. No, that's not the right thing, because that's kind of what I'm doing. I don't know. Whatever. Anyways, yeah, next week, Battle Angel Alita. Thank you guys for listening. I have no idea how long I'm going. I apologize if I'm going way over. Yeah, I'll catch you guys next week. Thank you for your patience. Bye-bye.